around 19 or older and single. A whole bunch of shy.
That's why you're still single.
Kind of wanted to know who my audience was, who I was talking to. You may be very happy being single. I was asked to discuss the topic of marriage. I'm not forcing anyone, telling anyone, I'm not even encouraging anyone to get married. That's your business, not mine. This is not intended to be a persuasive speech to get everyone married off. But I do have the intention of encouraging you to look into the mirror. Would you marry you? You know, looking in the mirror isn't always that easy. You start getting older, it's tougher all the time. Where'd my dad come from? Yeah. But we need to look in the mirror, however painful it is, sometimes spiritually, morally. Who is that guy I'm looking at? Would you marry you? Perhaps those that are single are very happy being single and you have no interest whatsoever in marrying. I know when I was younger it was challenging enough to find someone interested in dating. Back when I was 19, I probably would have married myself in a heartbeat. Maybe that was the problem. I did very well at pleasing myself. I stayed out as long as I wanted. I came home when I wanted. And I came home to myself. I bought what I wanted. I shared it with myself. I ate what I wanted and when I wanted, and I ate by myself. I went to bed when I wanted. And I slept alone. I did a lot of things for myself, and after a while, I grew tired of myself. I don't think I would have married myself. Would you marry you? Would you marry the guy in the mirror? What do you have to offer? One day wasn't very long ago, I was following a car. Had a bumper sticker on it. There was just one bumper sticker. And if I remember right, it was in capital letters. The bumper sticker said, "It's all about me." A young man driving in the car, not surprising, by himself. I'm not sure that his attitude of arrogance allowed anyone else in the car. If you're looking in the mirror and you have that attitude, it's all about me, I hope you're very happy single. Because I don't think you'd marry you. Apparently no one else wants to. In my mid-20s, I was very blessed to start dating Kim. She was very attractive. Was. I didn't at all mean that past tense. Very intelligent, very kind, and very loving. Kind of humbling when people talk about how opposites attract. But if you would marry you, if you answer that question, would you marry you? Tell me why. Why would you marry you? And I don't want to limit my remarks to only the single people. So I have a very serious question to ask. And I mean that with all my heart. Why would I stay married to me? Is that sobering enough? Why would I stay married to me? God and man both have laws that are to be obeyed, and we choose to obey. Or we choose not to obey. We have that free will. How many people here have seen someone run a stop sign? Perhaps we've done it ourselves. Just not paying attention. You know, laws are real good to pay attention to. It's important to pay attention to man's laws, but especially God's laws. Some people run stop lights, stop signs, and perhaps they think they have a good reason. I was in a hurry. No one was coming. I slowed down. I'm always humored by the story of the guy that tries to defend himself. He's telling the policeman, "I slowed down." And the policeman pulls him out of the car and starts beating him with his billy club. He says, "Do you want me to stop or do you want me to slow down?" You know, all of a sudden, there's a big difference, isn't there? You know, stop means to stop, and that's the law. All of a sudden, the true meaning surfaces. So regardless of the law, people still run stop signs. There is a punishment for that, and you could cause a terrible wreck. In Matthew, the 19th chapter, in verse 9, it says, "And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery, and whoever marries her who is divorced commits adultery." God hates divorce. But his law records one cause for divorce. I don't care what your reasons are. The law is one cause. It's not incompatibility. It's not, "I'm not happy." It's not, "I found someone that really loves me." When you break this law, there is a punishment, and most of the time, there is a terrible wreck. Regardless of the law, people still break it. People still have free will. They still leave their spouses. Even in the world of Christians, and we're all aware of this, there is a situation or situations when God's law is the only thing holding the couple together. This again is another terrible wreck. It's a life of hypocrisy. Let's just act like we love one another. No one acts that good. Others can see through the performance. That is when "till death do us part" becomes a goal instead of a promise. People marry to fulfill desires. Now, the husband and the wife both have desires and needs that they want fulfilled. Don't get the idea that everyone's needs or desires are the same. They differ. Perhaps your desires are different than anyone. But you still have those desires, don't you? And you know what those desires are. My desire is, fill in the blank. You know what your desires are. You know what you're looking for. For the purpose of discussion, I will tell you that one of my desires is coconut pie. I like coconut cream pie. And I see some heads nod. Flaky crust. That filling just packed full of coconut. Some meringue. You know how the ladies take, I think they take the spoons and they put those peaks on them and stick it in there and they turn brown. Sometimes there's those beads of sugar that set on top of the meringue. And just make your mouth water. So there. Now there are some people out there that have those desires. They like that. As far as I'm concerned, that's normal. No matter how much trouble I've gone to, if I'd made Kim a coconut cream pie like that, she might say, "You shouldn't have." And she would mean it. Because she hates coconut. There's nothing that you couldn't pay her to eat coconut, I don't think. Abnormal. Okay. But our interests, our desires are different. Don't go getting married thinking that everyone's interests and needs and desires are parallel with yours. They don't always run side by side. We have to communicate our desires with the ones that we love only if you want to be pleased. If you don't care about being pleased, just keep choking down that coconut pie that you don't like, that doesn't please you. How will the others know what your desires are unless you communicate this? To have open and honest communication sometimes make us very vulnerable. So if you're discussing with your mate, you know, I'd really like to have some rhubarb pie. What? No one likes rhubarb pie. You don't need rhubarb pie. I see some hands raising back here. That's just silly. Now, assuming that rhubarb pie is a lawful request, we need to realize how this person has made themselves vulnerable by telling you their desires. I'll give you an example. A woman may say, you know, you really don't bring me flowers anymore. You don't need flowers. That's frivolous. That's silly. You don't need them. You don't tell me you love me anymore. Well, I told you when I got married, when I changed my mind, I'll tell you that. I myself, I don't need the confirmation of my wife telling me that she loves me all the time. I know that by the way she acts, by the way she treats me. It seems to me, by my limited knowledge, that women like to hear that. That's not silly. That's not foolish. You don't need me to tell you that. If they express their desires and you respond this way, what you have done is slammed a door of communication shut. You have locked it. You have nailed it. You have barricaded it. And good luck ever getting it open again. When we communicate our desires, our wants, and our needs, and we get a negative response, our vulnerableness has been taken advantage of. In 1 Corinthians 7 and 3, it says, let the husband render to his wife the affection due her, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Do not deprive one another. If we abstain, deprive, or refuse to fulfill the needs of our spouse, don't be surprised when someone else tries to. If your desires were ignored, would you stay married to you? Marriage has taken on a lot of selfishness, the I wants instead of the I want to give. And our society has really degraded such a blessing that God has given us. I was asked to talk about marriage, not divorce. We need more teaching on the seriousness of marriage, what it is, and what God expects. A decision God wants to last for a lifetime, a union second only to the commitment to God. Kim and I, a few years ago, attended a marriage retreat. Some of you may have also been involved. You may have heard of them that they've had in different locations. A brother learned of our plans, and he gave me this real concerned look. I didn't know you two were having trouble. And it was all seriousness. So, trying to improve what you have, apparently there must be problems. I don't read it that way. Is there something wrong with preventive maintenance in a marriage? Can a good thing get better? Does there have to be a problem to promote improvement? I don't believe so. Always strive to improve and communicate how to do this. It is a tragedy to marry and not have a clue about what love is. And I think that we can all continually grow in learning what love is. Some people don't know the difference between love and infatuation. That is very sad. We need to talk and teach more about marriage and how great it is and what a blessing it is. It is a gift from God. In Genesis 2 and 18, and the Lord said, it is not good that man should be alone. I will make him a helper. In Genesis 2, 22, then the rib which the Lord God had taken from man, he made into woman and brought it to her. And he brought her to the man. And every time I read that verse, I throw in James 1 and 17. Every good gift and every perfect gift comes from above. God gave man a woman. First time I said that from a pulpit, I really fouled up. I spoke of how God knows what we need before we know. Now, where was it that Adam said, make me a woman? And I stopped and I thought, no, make a woman for me. That's what I want. Okay, you guys didn't even get that. Okay. I got some looks when I said it, I know that. But every good gift and every perfect gift comes from above. It's a good gift. It's a perfect gift. An excellent wife is a crown to her husband. He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. A good gift, a perfect gift, a precious gift to be cherished. God created woman for man. 1 Corinthians 11 and 8. For man is not from woman, but woman from man. Nor was man created for the woman, but woman for the man. In 1 Timothy 2:13, for Adam was first formed, then Eve. This was the plan of God, not the plan of man. God gave man the role of leadership. We didn't ask for it. We didn't take a vote. This is the plan of God. Woman should not take that role away from man. Ephesians, the 5th chapter, wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as also Christ is the head of the church. Our society bristles at the thought of submission. Bring that word up, and it just goes against the grain. But God does not force anyone to submit to Him. We willingly choose to submit to God. And for you women, I don't know that anyone is forcing you to say, I do, to the man that you don't want to marry. Well, we're in Ephesians, the 5th chapter. This is a good chapter for Jay to read for Jay, not for Jay to read for Kim. Kim, you need to read Ephesians, the 5th chapter. Now, you don't look at that chapter for the spouse. You look at that chapter for what I need to do, the role that I need to fulfill. Are you willing to submit, or do you have plans on molding or changing this man into what you want? People train pets. Parents train children. Train up a child in the way he should go. Wives do not and are not instructed to train their husband. It is insulting to man, and it is degrading to the plan of God for a woman to disrespect her husband's role. Now, there is nothing at all wrong with iron sharpening iron. But we all need to recognize and fulfill the roles that God has given us. One day I was discussing with an older brother Genesis 3:16, where it talks about the woman, God saying, your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you. While this gentleman, this brother, was talking to me, his wife completely disregards what he has to say, interrupts him, and explains to both of us what the verse means. I can't even tell you what she said because I was so in awe of, do you have any idea what you've just done? Just shut up and let me tell you what this means. Her spirit was so abrasive, and I don't think she even had a clue. I don't think she had a clue of the way she was coming across or the disrespect that she was showing her husband. When you accept a marriage proposal, you should agree to submit and to respect. Say yes to the man that you do love and respect and are willing to submit to him. A woman can be a terrific help and a blessing. She can be a terrible hindrance and a curse. In Proverbs 12 and 4, I read the first part of this earlier, but an excellent wife is a crown to her husband, but she who causes shame is like rottenness to his bones. For you women that do not know this, if us men were given a choice of love or respect, most of us would choose respect. That's probably why Ephesians 5:22 does not say, wives, love your husbands, and husbands, love your wives. That's not what it says. It says, wives, submit to your own husbands. Husbands, love your wives. Now, I may be wrong. That'd be a good question for you to ask your husband tonight. If it came down to the two, love or respect, which would you choose? Now, we as husbands, of course, we want both. But which is more important to you, love or respect? And while you're asking him, go ahead and ask him, do you feel respected? Wondering how many conversations there'll be tonight. You know, for the great relationships, the response might be, sweetheart, I love you so much and I treasure our relationship. Thank you so much for loving me and showing me the respect that you do. For the relationships that have great potential, the response might be, honey, I love you very much. I'm sure there are things that both of us can work on. For the very sad relationship, that'll be the husband that's choking down his coconut pie saying, yes, ma'am, I feel respected. They're afraid. And it's so shameful. I see men that are afraid to leave, and their wives are eager to take over. Women, do you really want to be the leader? That's not God's plan. But do you want to be the leader? Do you respect a man that follows instead of leads? Let me let you in on a hint. No one else respects him. And every man in here can name some of them. Do you want a boy to train or do you want a man to respect? If you plan on changing your spouse, would you marry you? Would you say I do to you? Christ gave himself for the church. Now God gave man a bride when he created woman and brought him to man. So woman was given to man. But Christ gave himself for the church. So Christ, the man, gave himself for his bride. Ephesians 5:25, husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her. Now let's back up just for a minute. Ephesians 5:22, wives, submit to your own husbands as unto the Lord. Which one of these verses do you think is referred to or quoted more? They should be looked at equally. I am ashamed as a man to confess to you that I believe wives, submit to your husbands is referred to and quoted many times more than husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself for her. What kind of a husband is Christ? In Matthew 11:28, come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden. I will give you rest. He is a husband that gives and offers rest. Psalms 29:11. The Lord will give strength unto his people. The Lord will bless his people with peace. John 14:27. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you, not as the world gives do I give to you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid. Christ is a husband that gives encouragement, a peaceful environment, and security. John 15:15, no longer do I call you servants, for a servant does not know what his master is doing. But I have called you friend, for all things that I heard from my Father I have made known to you. Christ is a husband that calls you a friend. He shares all that he has. He doesn't keep anything from his own. John 13:1, now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come, that he should depart from this world to his Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. His love is committed. It is committed, even under the most severe trials. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given him all things into his hands and that he had come from God and was going to God, rose from supper and laid aside his garment, took a towel and girded himself. After that he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel with which he was girded. Jesus washed the feet of the disciples. Knowing what he was facing, he was still serving. He was still loving. He was still sharing with his friends. Matthew 20:27, and whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Would you offer a rest or expect your wife to do the woman's work? Isn't it a romantic thing to say, oh, I'd die for my wife. I'd die for my wife. Same guy that says that may have never run a sweeper in his life. Would you offer that rest? Or would you expect her to do all the women's work? Would you encourage, or would you remind her that you are the head of the house? Would you be a friend, or would you be the boss? Would you share all that you have, or would you have to have your toys? Would your love endure through the hard times? Think about how you'd answer these questions, and then look in the mirror and say, would you marry you? Too often I have seen fathers tell their children how stupid and incapable their mothers are. Too often I've seen husbands treat their wives as one of the children. Ephesians 5:28, he who loves his wife loves himself. When we turn to 1 Peter 3:5, it says, in former times the holy women who trusted in God also adorned themselves, being submissive to their own husband, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. Now, I don't want my wife to call me Lord. It would embarrass me. Nor do I think that wives need to address their husbands as Lord, but being Lord has to do with having the rule of the home. Being Lord has to do with being respected as the head of the home. If we as husbands take our role seriously and lead our homes and treat our wives as Christ treats the church, we may be treated and respected as a Lord. Genesis 2:22 says, therefore a man shall leave his father and his mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. You now are two adults, but you are one flesh, one unit, one couple. Now you are going to make decisions together. Can you leave mom and dad behind? Wives, do not want to be compared to your mother. And husbands, do not want to be compared to your father. Leave father and mother. What else are you leaving? There are things that you need to leave behind. One thing is your selfishness. It's no longer me. It's us. It's not mine. It's ours. It's our time. It's our space. It's our money. It's our family. It's our home. It's not mine. It's not me. It's not all about me. You are one unit. Consider what Jesus left behind to prepare an eternal home for his bride.